Welcome back to the Trinity, Tims. You might have missed us on Monday. I think we were overwhelmed by apathy on the Celtic transfer front. So, as ever, I'm joined by the reddened face of Eric from and the paler face of James from the Celtic world. So, it's 3 days on since all that excitement of the transfer window. So we knew that two players were coming in on Sunday. They went through their medicals, and then Celtic slowly released the information. And we got the bonus of Ben Arthur, a guy even less football than Jamai Simpson, to say. And we are two defensive injuries away from going into any match with a defensive partnership of Dean Murray and Ben Arthur. So that's my cynical take on it. I wonder if James is more upbeat and positive. James, how excited and how do you feel reflecting that on the transfer window and all that apathy of deadline day?
It went exactly as we all expected it to go. Exactly as we all expected it. One shambles after another, one incoherent decision after another, one utter mess after another, and one embarrassment after another. And we ended up with a squad which is stronger than it was, that is without a shadow of a doubt. But that says a lot for how weak the squad was in the first place. When Tony Ralston is your right back, when Johnny Kenny is your centre forward, when your other centre forward is a guy called Shinny Mada, who most of us still don't know why the hell he was signed, any improvement, you'll take it. But you don't have to be happy with it, and I don't think I'm very happy with it.
Short and sweet. Unusual for you, James. Eric, you were watching events from a distance. I'm sure nothing came as a surprise to you. What's your overall take in the inactivity of the transfer window and another failure on the watch of Michael Nicholson?
It was just exactly like James said. It's exactly as I expected it to be. I knew they wouldn't, you know, I think like last week and the week before, we consistently spoke about the fact that they hadn't spent a single penny in the whole of the transfer window. And that's exactly how it transpired in the end. It's clear there is no long-term strategy. There is they're taking precautions from, I'd imagine, in their view, because they know there's a rebuild coming in the summer. But I think the fact of the matter is that we can't have these guys overseeing a rebuild. It's that simple. We can't have them hiring a new manager. We can't have them overseeing a rebuild because I think we all know what way it's going to go. Or what way it's going to end up, because they won't get a decent manager. They won't be able to attract a decent manager. And if they can't attract a decent manager, they're certainly not going to be able to attract decent players for a rebuild. So, like James, very underwhelming. Yes, the squad is a bit stronger. We have bodies. We have warm bodies. And we did discuss that as well in the previous pods as well, that, you know, we'll probably get some warm bodies in the door and that's it. We can actually manage to rotate. Now, how good they are or how good they'll shape up to be, only time will tell. We will find out, I'm sure, whether Martin O'Neill's stamp was on all of the signings, or whether this was just get bodies in the door and a panic, mass panic on the last day of the transfer window. Because that's what it looks like to me. It just looks like mass panic to try and get warm bodies in, and that's it, and totally underwhelming. And I can't judge it until I see what these players are like and whether they're going to contribute in a meaningful way to how this title race will go.
I think the loan signing of Joel Mavuka, if I'm pronouncing that right, sums things up. This is the guy to replace Nicholas Kuhn. So when Nicholas Kuhn was going to Como, I wonder where Joel Mavuka was on the Celtic list or in any list. So the way that unfolded, we were getting all excited about the guy at the top of the Italian Serie B. A lot of the messengers telling you it's on the go and things are happening, terms agreed, this, that, and the next thing. Quadrupling his wages, four and a half year contract. Surprise, surprise, it never happened. And then I am certainly no hipster, but all the folk with stats, all the folks with access to data can find absolutely nothing in this. that justifies him being anywhere. Fingers crossed he comes in and replaces Nicholas Coon. Or fingers crossed he comes in and does a competent job. But there's nothing in this guy's record. We were a medical away from giving him a 4.5-year contract and paying a fee of £3 million for him. None of us are particularly bothered for preserving the bank balance, but that looked like more money down the drain. So, but this guy underwent a medical on Sunday. We've got Martin O'Neill's word for that. And then word emerged. We were expecting the slow drip of news from Celtic, but word emerged on Monday that maybe there's something amiss. Then we get a French report saying he'd failed his medical. And instead of washing your hands and walking away from it, Celtic brought him in on loan. There's a guy at Motherwell that's actually pretty good. He's been in Scottish football for 2 seasons. In January, he scored a ton of goals against the teams that Celtic were playing against. And for some reason, Celtic were all in for Joel Mavuko. James, Eric's touched on it. The strategy, ho, ho, ho. I mean, what sort of rebuild is waiting in the summer? We all hope the squad, we'll all admit, hands up, the squad is stronger. It's not too difficult to improve on the squad that went into the 1st of January. But instead of making some small steps towards improving the squad and giving the next manager something to work with, we've increased the workload. I suspect, well, I've said it before, but no competent managers coming into Celtic anytime soon. No one that's good at their job is going to trust negotiations down to Michael Nicholson and then getting his email approved from a golfer in the Caribbean. So I reckon they must, nothing happens until they appoint a director of football that's got autonomy. But James, what scale of rebuild is awaiting in the summer, which is a World Cup summer and will involve Champions League qualifiers either in will involve UEFA qualifiers, hopefully a Champions League playoff in August, but if that doesn't happen, there could be matches in July to try and get through to the Champions League or another UEFA competition. What's the rebuild, James?
Well, I mean, first let me tackle one gigantic idiotic misconception here, is that we are net spend freaks. Let me tell you what I took from the transfer window, right? And I'll talk about the Mbuka deal in a minute, but what I took from the transfer window is I would rather spend no money and bring in two loanees to play up front than pretend to be excited about spending £4.5 million on a signing from Germany's third tier. If that's the guy they're hoping to save their season, they're in for a big disappointment. Germany's third tier. I would be cringing with embarrassment if Celtic spent £4.5 million on a German third tier player. We've signed two Bundesliga forwards. Yes, they're only here on loan. But I am much more satisfied and much more confident about that than I would be about a third tier signing from Germany. And I'm not all that concerned about how much money was spent or no spent. I am slightly embarrassed that our club couldn't spend more money than St Mirren, Livingston, St Johnston, Aberdeen, Hibs, Hearts. I'm not so concerned that the Ibrox club has went and spent upwards of £10 million. It's what you get with it that matters. It's not, you know, your willingness to throw it around like confetti. The Mbuka deal is seriously disturbing, but seriously disturbing. The whole way we went about that is seriously disturbing. I'm not quite so ready to damn it as a bad signing because he played a lot of the stats that are getting bandied about are based on last season where he played at right back. So I'm not going to worry too much about stats and numbers. Let the number boards have their fun. So I'm not going to get overly concerned about that. I'm a manager as architect person. And if the manager thinks that his attributes fit in his style of play, I'm happy to support the manager on that. I'm happy to back Martin on that. Where I'm really concerned is how the deal got done. Everything that I see and hear about it convinces me that we behaved in a very underhanded and shady fashion. And I don't want to think that in my own club, and I don't want to think that people in my own club would behave that way. But we've seen enough of these people to suspect the worst. And I suspect that we behaved in a very shady and underhanded fashion. We have undermined the player. We have undermined the agent. We were probably pissed his club off. The idea that we were surprised to find out that there were issues in his medical is nonsensical. Because Laurent flagged them when they signed them. The team before them flagged them when they signed them. It's on his Wikipedia page that he has a heart condition. This is not a secret. Nobody was caught by surprise here. And the idea that we found something in a medical that caused us to think again, I'm sorry, I don't believe it for a minute. I think it's bullshit. I think that what happened was that the geniuses at our club saw an opportunity to save money on doing the deal right now and found a way out of it. That's genuinely what I believe. I don't see it. There's nothing that convinces me otherwise. These are underhanded people who are walking out of our club, and that would be fine. Except that it makes our reputation look like shit. No one will want to pick up the phone and deal with us while these people are there. If we continue to behave this way towards other clubs and treat players and agents like this, our reputation in a way that's going to do serious long-term structural damage to our club. I mean, we already know that we pulled out a deal at the medical stage at the start of the window because the guy announced it on his Twitter feed that he was looking forward to making his debut at Celtic Park. And then we pulled the rug from under his feet. And we started delaying about whether or not we'd be paid the transfer fee. And at that point, his agent says, well, look, there's interest elsewhere. See you later. In fact, his agent said that they didn't even pay the hotel bill, that they didn't even let Celtic pay the hotel bill because they didn't want to even look like they felt under any obligation is to conclude the talks. So that's the kind of reputation we're getting all across Europe. And if this has went down the way I think it has, with our guys acting surprised all of a sudden about a fact that's been in the public domain about this player for ages, I think it's disgusting. I think it's a shocking way to behave.
Yep, there's not too much to be added to that. Unfortunately, it falls into a pattern. We heard in the summer how Plymouth were concerned about the way they dealt with Stephen Welsh. We heard from a Dutch club when we were after Broom, the winger, and we suffered the ultimate slap in the face when they compared it to the professional way that you get dealt with at Ibrox. So you don't want to be a pushover for clubs, but there's a middle ground, and you've got to act professional and normal, and that applies to agents and clubs. So we can appoint a director of football tomorrow, can appoint a director of football next week, and we do not move any further forward until that happens. If we're leaving Nicholson anywhere near deals, the current non-event of our recruitment department and the ultimate say-so up to an elderly golfer, then we're in for more repeats of the summer and of January. But the lack of genuine improvement in the squad has brought us on to a nice deflection tactic. And I thought it was a complete deflection tactic, but it does seem as if Celtic are seriously interested in Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. He's not played a competitive match since May. He might have a good general level of fitness. He might be very fit from training with Arsenal, but I've no idea how he gets match fit coming to Celtic. If we were 15 points clear and he'd the World Cup or something to target, I could see it. But we need every player for every minute and every match at the moment. There is no slack in our performances where we can throw somebody on to bring him up to speed. Eric, you've been a little bit out of the loop, but over the piece, in light of the underwhelming transfer activity, what's your take on the possibility of bringing in Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and possibly having him in the UEFA squad tonight for matches on February the 19th and 26th.
Look, I never dispute the fact that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, in his heyday, was a very good player. There's no two ways about that. His record speaks for itself. it doesn't seem to have worked out very well for him at Besiktas. He did win a cup competition there, all right with him. But he... to me, if I'm looking at it from one point of view, it kind of smacks of coming up to Scotland to do the old retirement gig, you know. at 32. Similar to Aaron Ramsey. And somebody just commented on that there. You know, I think it could be something similar to that. And then I'm looking at what other folks are saying, and they're saying that, oh, we could have another situation like Lubo Moravcik, you know, where we bring in this guy and he sets the game alight for a year or two, like Moravcik did. But the big concern, obviously, is he's you know, it's a long time since he's kicked a football in anger. So, I mean, that's okay. He's been training with Arsenal at the moment. Is he up to a full fitness level from the training that he's been doing with Arsenal? Is he up to a level where if he's going to be put into the European squad that he'll be able to go out there and do a job against Stuttgart? I would have my doubts based on the lack of first-team football he's played in the last few months that he could meaningfully contribute. But you said something earlier on there, Joe, about, you know, we could have a director of football in the building tomorrow. I'm going to make a call now, right? If we cannot shift these guys out of the boardroom, the director of football will be Martin O'Neill and the manager will be Sean Maloney. And I can guarantee you that's what they will try and do, because they take the easy way out for everything they do. And that, to them, you already have your director of football in the building and you already have the guy who is taking all the training sessions while Martin O'Neill oversees it anyway. So that, to me, is what is going to be on the cards if we don't shift these guys out. Because as you said, no serious manager is going to come to Celtic. And if we don't have a serious manager or a manager of a decent caliber in the club, it's not going to augur well when it comes to getting decent signings into the club. And obviously, when we have the level of shit that goes on in the transfer windows with the current board and Michael Nicholson in charge, it's all just going to continue to be farcical. But yeah, I mean, we've called this time for action, you know, this podcast, it is time for action. And it is time that we really put the pressure on these guys to move on. But with regards to Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, you don't know what you're going to get. If we do get him, that could still fall through, knowing or ignoring our incompetence anyway. So, I mean, they could probably have it on the last, not, you know, the last few details, and the whole thing could fall through. You just know that they're more than capable of doing that. But like I said, if they think that they can bring in somebody with a big name like that to appease us, it's not going to work. It still means they're not spending a penny, you know, and they have shown no ambition to spend any money. The reason they didn't bring in Masvanhiza is because he cost money. It just killed them to actually spend money. So they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't pay the 4 million that Motherwell wanted. So yeah, he could be a great signing. He could be absolute shit and a complete waste of money like Aaron Ramsey was. We just don't know what we're getting here. Look, all it'll take is for Hugh Keevans to write him, you know, to write him off and say how shit he is, you know, like he did with Lubo Moravcik, and then, you know, he rose to the occasion like Lubo did. But I'm sure if the guy gets up to full fitness and he's, you know, match ready, he probably could do a job in our league. But what sort of level of fitness he has? Is he injury prone? And is he going to be suited to the rough and tumble of Scottish football and playing against teams who put 11 men behind the ball and referees who favour only one side, which we'll touch on soon enough, I'm sure. But yeah, it's a gamble. That's it. It's a gamble, whether it pays off. It'll probably be the same sort of level of gamble as the rest of the signings we've had in this window. We just don't know if they're going to pay off. He does have a reputation. He does have, you know, he has done it in the past. Whether he can do it again or not remains to be seen.
James, if Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain was fit to play football on the 19th of February, I'm convinced it'd be somebody in England, in the London area, that would sign him in a nanosecond. He's been at Arsenal, I think, training since November. Apparently played in some training matches, etc., etc. But I just find it impossible to think that this guy is close to being ready to play football and that Celtic is the best offer on the table for him. Generally, there tends to be problems with players that come to Scottish football. Joe Hart was a great example. Worked fantastically for Joe Hart for 3 seasons. Kasper Schmeichel, we get 1 great season and now it's a little bit up and down. What's your view, James, on the likelihood of signing Alec Oxlade-Chamberlain, and when is he match ready? When's he ready to start a football match for Celtic?
Right, well, let's take one point first. Comparisons with Aaron Ramsey are not quite there. Ramsey had bummed about football for about 2 or 3 years and had hardly played for anybody. Ramsey was always one of the players that went chasing money and transfer deals, is why he had so many of them. And Ramsey was basically up here on holiday. That's the truth of it. Oxlade-Chamberlain has been playing regularly, semi-regularly, for the last couple of years for really top-class teams. And whenever he's moved in his career, when he moved to Arsenal or Liverpool, for example, everybody thought that it was some kind of downward move, but he went there and won a Champions League, so it wasn't exactly a backward step. It got to the end, his time at Liverpool, and there were concerns with his place and his fitness. He went to Turkey and played really well. Apparently, it's Giovanni van Bronckhorst who didn't fancy him, which is the... I don't think we should take that as a final definitive, this guy can't play anymore. O'Neill wants to play him in a certain position, I think. O'Neill's got a very clear idea, I think, what he wants to do with him. If you make Alec Oxlade-Chamberlain a deep line playmaker in the Celtic team, or you push him up front into the kind of the role Amit Engels is in right now, that guy will run riot and score. That guy will score goals. He will set goals up. If we give him an 18-month contract, he'll be an asset for us in Europe next season. I cannot see how this is a bad deal. I cannot see how we screw this up. If this guy is fit enough to pass a medical, he'll be more than one of our signings has already been. And as far as I'm concerned, I will trust the manager. It's the kind of deal we should be doing. It's the kind of deal we should be exploring. He's a much better footballer than Aaron Ramsey. He's a much bigger name than Aaron Ramsey. I said in the article I wrote about it the day that this is the biggest name player to come to Scottish football in the last 2 decades. And I absolutely stand by that. I defy any Ibrox fan to come and say that they wouldn't be excited about this if it was their club. And the media would be salivating about it and they would not stop. They would be raving about this guy every day for the rest of his time in Scotland, whether he played well or not. I mean, I remember Joey Barton signing at, 34, and he was going to be player of the year, and all these mega predictions were getting made about him. And the same about Ramsey when he came here. And as I said, I wrote in the piece today that people told me at the time, Ramsey's the biggest name that came to Scottish football in its entire history. And I said, well, what about Joe Hart? Joe Hart, who's played for England, has won English Premier League titles. And apparently not. But I was right and they were ranked. So, nah. No, I'm excited about this one. I think this is a good deal. I think it's a smart deal. And what I really can't understand is why we don't try and sign mere players for the Bosman market, because even if you look at Scotland, even if you look at where we are, you had Charlie McGrew the other day, and I severely savaged him for it, suggesting that we should have sold Engels and bought Josh Milligan from Hibs. Well, that would have been a bit mad, since Josh Milligan was available for free at the start of the season. We didn't bother with us, but we should have perhaps went and looked at Josh Milligan and signed Josh Milligan. But we don't use the Bosman market enough, and I find it bizarre. I really find it bizarre. A reticence to go and see who's on that list, and a reticence to go and find out which players are out of contract in 6 months' time and say, he'll do. We've got a whole team to build. It would be nice if we kind of got started on it.
James, that's all very half full. When's Alec Oxlade-Chamberlain ready to start a first-team match at Celtic?
Now, the thing is, if he's been training at Arsenal, he's not unfit.
Correct.
You know what I mean? If he's been training at Arsenal, he's not far away from being there. And the fact that we've got so many games in such a short space of time, he's certainly going to get up to speed fast. So, I don't know. He's not ready to make his debut at the weekend. But and you know what? I wouldn't register him or play him in Europe this season. I don't think he's being signed for that. I think he's being signed to give us that thing in midfield right now that we don't quite have. And we've all talked about how the midfield needed an extra body in it. Well, he's perfect for that. And I certainly don't think he's been signed to play in Europe. But a debut at Ibrox is not out of the question. A full 90 minutes at Ibrox is not out of the question.
March the 1st. So these various issues with recruitment, negotiations, transfer policy, et cetera, all very predictable. On Tuesday night, there was a meeting of the Celtic Collective. To the surprise of no one, the Not Another Penny campaign was endorsed to continue. We saw absolutely nothing from the club to suggest that they're changing their ways, that they're modernising, they're doing anything different from what they've failed in previously. So it brought everything towards a bit of a crescendo. There was a vote in the room for a boycott of the match on Saturday, which is a very, very contentious issue. There's some guys utterly dedicated to their seats, and they can't imagine Celtic playing a match without them. My view is it's entirely an individual's choice. It's nice of the collective to give some guidance and support, but it's all up to the individual. And again, going back to 1994, at the start of that season, Celtic were getting reported crowds of 40-odd thousand through August and September. Things went as predicted, and the time January came round, the crowds were down to 18,000, 19,000. It only took about 4,000 or 5,000 people joining in a boycott in February. Eric's boycotting his seat. Eric's repositioned himself. But it only required a few thousand people joining a boycott in 1994 for it to go below 10,000, and then the bank called them. And so the Co-op Bank are not going to call Celtic in on Monday if the crowd's below a certain level for the match against Dundee. The game against Dundee, the gate proceeds will be split after expenses are taken. Tickets are £25. A lot of people already have got them in the home ticket scheme. So, James, what's your thoughts on the call for a boycott, the likely success of it or the likely failure of it, and how do things develop? What's the next steps for the collective? There's probably some people in the collective are wanting to go for a boycott from September time. It's taken various issues and various repeated failures, a manager in, a manager out, resignation of a chairman, bringing in another old fogey as interim chairman at Kids On. He's looking for unity and couldn't be bothered arranging a meeting. Where do you stand, James, with the boycott and where the collective are moving?
Well, the collective has moved at the speed that it had to move it. I know there were people who initially wanted to boycott, and there were people who have basically come to every meeting and said, this is the time. I thought we should have boycotted the Falkirk game, but granted, there were people who thought that organising it would be difficult. I always thought this was the most likely one to get boycotted because it's a Scottish Cup game and it doesn't affect the league situation. It's a horrible place for us to be. It's a horrible place for the club to be, but this is nobody's fault except the board of directors. They've had multiple chances to avoid this. And all they had to do was sit down and engage with fans properly and talk to fans about their concerns and treat them with a bit of respect. That would have forestalled this quite possibly for the whole season. And they'd been willing to sit down and talk and discuss it and no acted quite so perversely as they have. But when you ban fan media and you ban an entire section of the support and you do it on the most spurious imaginable grounds, you cannot accuse fans who are boycotting of being the ones who are hurting the club or hurting the team, because that's nothing but a barefaced lie. I'm glad that the whole discussion's being had with a lot of respect. I'm going to publish a piece tomorrow that is not going to be very respectful, but it's not going to be respectful because the people who I'm writing about aren't very respectful. There is a word that I don't use often, because it's a very specific context word and it's got nothing to do with identity. It's all about behaviour. And I have called people who self-define as Celtic fans Huns because that's what they're behaving like. But that's for the more, and I won't go into any more detail than that. But for the most part, we're all discussing this rationally and behaving sensibly towards each other. Give you a good example. Our supporters bus is maybe 70-30. In favour of the boycott. But the 30% who are against it and want to go and watch the team, they still have to get to Celtic Park. And we're not letting them go to Celtic Park without, you know what I mean, organising it for them. So the bus is still running. All the members who are only gone we're up here choosing, we're making sure that there's any burden on the guys who want to go. And that is symptomatic of the way this is being handled by the whole support. It's a matter of personal choice, and we have total respect for every single person who is on the other side of it. And there's one dickhead there. There you go. This is what I fucking mean. Why should I respect your point of view, James McNally, you fucking fud? Why should I respect your point of view? How will boycotting fans hurt the club? Explain it to me. Rub your two brain cells together and come up with an explanation for how that happens. We're not here because of supporters. We're here because the club has treated fans like shit for far too long. Far too long. And if you put your hand in your pocket over the course of January, you spent more money on Celtic during the transfer window than Celtic spent on players. We were outspent by St Mirren, by Aberdeen, by Hibs, by Hearts, by the club at Ibrox, by St Johnstone, by Livingston. Somebody told me that our Scottish Cup opponents, Auchinleck Talbot, spent 150 quid on a player during the transfer window. That's more money than we spent. Maybe some people are satisfied with that. Maybe some people are getting the club they deserve. But the rest of us are only just going to stand here and watch it deteriorate to that point. A lot of us aren't going to accept that. And you either respect us for our motives, or you forfeit the right to be respected for yours. Honestly, I'm tired of people having a go at their fellow fans because of decisions of conscience, because that's what this is. This is the decision of conscience. And if you think that we haven't sat down and thought about this and thought about what the ramifications of this are, you're mental. Because of course we have. The people who are running Celtic are the people who are hurting Celtic. They're the ones whose decisions have cost us tens of millions of pounds in Champions League qualification money. That's a fact. There is no harm that Celtic fans can do to the club that is worse than what the people in charge of the club have already done. Their decision to appoint Wilfred Nancy cost us 8 games and quite possibly this league title. It cost us the League Cup. How many more decisions do you want them to make that are going to continue to hurt us and cost us? And the only way these people are going to go is with pressure, unrelenting pressure. And that is what we intend to put on them.
Yep. When you're talking about costing the club money, the ultimate irony, and we've all had a good laugh at it over the last couple of days, Arnie Ingles, £11 million Belgian dud, as defined by Chris Boyd and Neil Lennon. If this so-called well-run club was actually well-run, they would have had a replacement or two in line, in place for Arnie Ingles, and he could have ran round the boardroom on Sunday or Monday, patting each other on the back and high-fiving over the fantastic business deal. But instead, because you undermined the manager, because you've undermined the player, then everything's been run down. There's no replacement, no prospect of a replacement. So reluctantly, they were too scared to okay the deal for Aaron Ramsey. Not Aaron Ramsey at all. The deal for Arnie Ingles. Arnie Ingles, who has never missed a penalty in a Europa Cup final. But Eric, earlier this season, the collective announced a plan of 3 silences at matches. After the first silence, Celtic agreed to have a meeting with them. The infamous shrug of the shoulders, October the 6th meeting. And since then, there seems to have been absolutely nothing from the club. So the use of this cosy little setup called a fans forum, where they'd invite some of their pet supporter representatives, tell them about their fantastic plans. And a day or two later, there'd be wee snippets appear on the internet here and there. And that was a box-ticking exercise. But Celtic haven't even managed to hold a fans forum since May 2025. So I think there's some UEFA director. Aye, on you go.
Even the people who were there at the last one, if it is the last one that I'm thinking of, even the people who were there, the people who were handpicked to be there because they know the kind of people who generally rock the boat, even they were pretty astounded and even disgusted when Michael Nicholson sat at the meeting and lied to their face. Lied to their face by talking about a meeting that he had held with some of the people in that room, which never happened. That's the contempt they treat people with. That's the level at which they operate and the way they see supporters. They think they can sit in front of people and lie about meetings that never took place. Well, the people who were allegedly at that meeting are sitting there in the room. I mean, you don't get much worse than that. You don't get much more contempt than that. And that's who these people are. But some people apparently are perfectly all right with him running their club.
Yeah, but look, James, in the commentary there, Rodgers lost his Kyrat. I mean, what fucking relevance has that got to anything? No, Rodgers did not lose his Kyrat. Paul Tisdale lost his Kyrat. And Michael Nicholson. And Michael Nicholson fucking...
Rodgers have to say, we are not ready for this game. Help us. Get us ready. Give us the players we need to do this. How many times did he have to say it?
Yeah, but it's his fault.
Of course it's his fault. Oh, of course. It must be Martin O'Neill's fault as well then. This transfer window was such a disaster. Martin O'Neill was sat there on Sky the other night and said that the current recruitment process at Celtic is not worthy of Celtic.
Yeah. I can't believe that there are still people out there now who back this sport. It's just, it defies all fucking mental logic that people think that these guys are actually benefiting Celtic or doing a good job. It's just insane.
It's these characters showed what uber fantastic Celtic fans they are. And the classic deflection you're seeing online is, it's the Green Brigade. It is not the Green Brigade. It's a Celtic fans collective. There's more than 400 groups signed up to it. I haven't seen any notice of anyone withdrawing from the Celtic fans collective on the back of the call for a boycott. It's not an enforced boycott. They're suggesting, they're recommending a boycott. And most people that are staying away from the game on Saturday are pretty respectful. Like James's bus, they respect that there are people that just feel they must be there for the game. On the other hand, those that are uber Tims, those that are fanatical, those that are the true Celtic fans, they're having no truck with these rascals, influenced by the Green Brigade. And the chief lunatic out there is, of course, Lawrence Donegan. If you want a laugh, have a look at some of the nonsense he's publishing. I think Brian Wilson's probably even embarrassed by Lawrence Donegan these days. But Eric, as I was getting to, early in the season, the collective were having a silent protest at matches. One third of the way through that, the club called for a meeting. They don't even bother with meetings now. Brian Wilson's call for unity was clearly just another soundbite for a statement. It's not happened. So, Eric, how do you see the boycott at the weekend? There'll still be a decent crowd there, but I think the crowd, in recent times, thanks to the Home Cup ticket scheme and Celtic success in cup competitions, folk have been going to these matches in the hope of getting a semi-final or a final ticket. But I think a good few folk have been worn down by it. The ballot process for cup finals, for games at Hampden, is very secretive, and it seems more and more is getting shifted off towards corporate. So there's a variety of reasons that folk won't be going. Dundee at home, Saturday, 5:30 February. It's on Premier Sports. That's another reason. But what's your take on the boycott and the next steps forward for the collective?
Well, I mean, the three demands that the collective came up with on the night of the meeting are fundamental to this. The immediate reinstatement of the Green Brigade, the immediate reinstatement of media rights to all fan media groups, and the immediate removal of Michael Nicholson. And if boycotting is what we need to do to ensure these goals, I mean, I make the point that Celtic Park is absolutely devoid of an atmosphere at the moment. It is soulless. And in all of our lifetimes, when did we ever expect that Celtic Park would be a soulless place, you know, where there's no passion? There's no, I mean, even watching the Falkirk game there at the weekend, I mean, the cheer that was mustered for the goals, it's just, there was no atmosphere. The most atmosphere that was generated at that game against Falkirk was when the chant came, "Stand up if you hate the board." And that's, you see, unfortunately, where all of our energy is going now. Everybody who's on board with this, and we would say that probably 80% of people are now on board with it, you still have 20% of fucking gobshites out there who support these Muppets. But the fact of the matter is, they brought us to this. they have sapped the life and soul out of Celtic Football Club. As I said, the stadium is devoid of atmosphere now because of what they've done. And, you know, an awful lot of people say, oh, well, we shouldn't have to rely on the Green Brigade. You cannot deny, since last November, what extra bit of atmosphere that the Green Brigade brought to Celtic Park and what them not being there has resulted in since. We have, like, somebody else said it online about the atmosphere being so bad in there now. And that's not going to change either. Unless we get the change we need at the club, the atmosphere at Celtic Park is not going to change. It's still going to be soulless and it's still going to be devoid of a decent atmosphere because these guys in the boardroom, sitting in the soft seats, have sapped the fucking life out of the supporters. There and is. The supporters want change.
There it is.
You know?
Yeah.
They want change.
This is not just about them being absent for the stadium. This is about hope being absent for the stadium. This is about a feeling of connection with the club being absent for the stadium. That's what these people ultimately have done.
Yeah.
They've put fans who want nothing else but to go and see their team every single week in a position where those same fans would rather sit the Scottish Cup tie out than go and pretend to be happy or go and put on the appearance that they might be happy. That's what they've done to supporters. They put supporters in a position where guys who don't want to go and see their team don't want to go and see their team this weekend. That's what they've achieved. That's what their great leadership has brought. £77 million in the bank, record revenues. Came within an ace of going through to the second stages of the Champions League knockout phase last season. And in the space of a year, this is where we are. And this isn't the fans' fault that we're here. Fans want to be here. This is the last place fans want to be. It's the last situation fans want to be in. They did this to us. They've done this to our club. They've taken the heart out of Celtic Park because they've taken away our hope and our passion. And the only way to get it back is to fight for the club that we love. And that's what we're doing.
Eric, twice in the last couple of days, Martin O'Neill's been interviewed on Talk Sport and with Chris Sutton last night. And he's been asked about the situation of supporters and he's made his gags about being a peace envoy and all that sort of stuff. But Martin O'Neill's talked about it a couple of times. Are the board just ignoring him? I mean, it seems that way. The collective got in touch with Brian Wilson, offered him 3 dates, and he never got... Brian Wilson acknowledged an open letter from the Green Brigade. Not from the Green Brigade. Acknowledged a letter from the Celtic Fans Collective after he'd made the unity plea. He was then offered 3 dates and had nothing back from him. So, what's your take on Martin O'Neill getting involved? They could easily body swerve it and say that's for other people, but he has acknowledged there's a problem there. It would give the team quite a boost. It would give the ground a boost. It would give the support a boost, but it seems that Brian Wilson has got no intention of getting on the phone and getting in touch with the Celtic Fans Collective and trying to iron something out for the good of the club.
Well, I think you only have to look at, like, this board is totally disengaged from the footballing operation. It is completely disengaged from the footballing operation because of the sabotage that it has done to the football operation in the last year or so. They're not connected to it. They have done nothing, as we know, other than asset strip the footballing operation. So we saw what they did to Brendan Rodgers. We saw how they tried to blame Brendan Rodgers for everything. And now we know, clearly, look at how Brendan Rodgers is performing out in Saudi Arabia. He's got his mojo back. He's well able to manage a team where he's getting the assets he requires to be able to manage that team. No manager should have to beg for players. This, we've heard the board members over the years, time out of number, say that every single penny is reinvested in the football team, which is utter bullshit. They have torn every single penny that they can out of the football operation in the last couple of years. They have asset stripped everything that Ange Postecoglou and Frank Trimboli put together. There is only a handful of players left from that team at Celtic Park. And let's be honest about it, there's a good couple of them don't even want to be there. So, Are they ignoring Martin O'Neill? I don't think they're engaged with Martin O'Neill. If they were engaged properly with Martin O'Neill, then they wouldn't be doing what they wouldn't be doing the kind of business that they've done in the transfer window just gone. If they were engaged with that manager, if they were listening. Like, I think the biggest aspect of that, or the biggest highlight of that transfer window that you can take to say that this board is not engaged with management, is where both Sean Maloney and Martin O'Neill went to watch Motherwell play and to scout Moscow Heasy. He made it clear he wanted that player. He didn't get him. Now, if you're engaged with your manager, if you're a board that's engaged with your manager, you do that. You get him the player that he wants. Brendan Rodgers made it clear over the years in both his stints, players that he wanted, and the board royally fucked up in those situations. We can talk about John McGinn forevermore as one of the worst examples of what they did to a manager. So it boils down to this: these guys are not football men. They don't understand the game. They clearly don't understand how the transfer market operates, and they don't understand how to engage correctly with the football operation and the manager. Because who shafts a manager who won the amount of trophies that Brendan Rodgers did? Brought the level of success that Brendan Rodgers did. He won 11 trophies in both his stints, and the way that they treated him was abhorrent. Now, I know a lot of people say the guy had an ego, so on and so forth. Maybe he did have an ego, but regardless, you cannot deny what he brought to Celtic. You cannot deny what Martin O'Neill has brought to Celtic and what he did and how he turned things around at the turn of this century. Celtic would not be where they are now only for the foundations that he put in place back at the turn of this century. If anybody deserves respect and the utmost respect, it's Martin O'Neill. And they clearly didn't fucking respect him in this transfer window. They didn't go push the... And like going and paying $4 million for Moscow Heasy, that's not pushing the fucking boat out. $4 million is pittance. We've discussed the time out of number before, like the amount of money that we were spending on players at the turn of the century. $6 million on Sutton, $6 million on Hartson. Like, we were forking out way bigger fees for players at the turn of the century. And we also discussed the club's turnover was so much less. Yet we were bringing in much bigger transfers. Now they just, like, the club has just come out of a year where its turnover was at its highest. It had liquidity in the bank that could have bought them any player they really wanted without breaking the bank. You know, you wouldn't have a problem buying 4, 5, and 6 million players. They did go out and spend 5 million on two players, and look at them. I mean, look at Balikwisha, and we spent over 5 million on him. And then again, Tunekti, I still think he has a lot to. He has potential, but he has a lot to show still to say that he's of the caliber that we require on the wing for Celtic. It's consistency more than anything that Tunekti needs. But that was 10 million quid wasted. A good half of it anyway was wasted on Balikwisha, unless Martin O'Neill can get a tune out of that guy, but I don't see anybody getting a tune out of him. So yeah, I mean, I don't think they're engaging with him. They didn't engage with him. They proved that they didn't engage with him by the way they behaved in this transfer window. The fact that we didn't do them, like that, we brought in 3 loan players on the last day of the transfer window, and look, at the risk of repeating what James said, like they're St. Johnston, Auchinleck Talbot spent more money on players in the transfer window than we did, and that kind of sums it up for me. Really, that's as long as these guys are at Celtic Park, as long as these guys are in our boardroom, they are never, ever going to prioritise the footballing operation. It's never going to be a priority. The bottom line is always going to be a priority for these guys. They will not put the football operation at the top of where it should. Because we've discussed this many, many times before, that if the footballing operation was invested in the correct manner, it would generate more than enough finance for Celtic as a club if it was supported correctly. Just... small example, Kairat Almaty didn't make it into the Champions League. $40 million down the drain because we spent nothing and we didn't get the players that Brendan Rodgers required to actually get us into the Champions League. This is my point. They will never speculate to accumulate. They don't seem to understand how to do that. It's all about stripping what they can out of the team and spending as little as possible, ultimately. So, yeah, they're... if we don't get these guys out, and that goes back to boycotts and pushing them out, if we don't get them out, nothing's going to change. Celtic is good, just going to flounder from here on out. And as we said, Celtic Park's just going to be a soulless place with the life absolutely sapped out of it by these guys. And it's just going to become more, and fans are just going to become more and more resentful when they see them sitting in the soft seats. So it is only going to end one way, but it just depends on how much pain we're going to have to take before it does end. But it will. And it should. Before this season is over. Because it has to.
Eric, we were talking about transfer fees there. But there's two very expensive transfers in Celtic's history that get very little attention. It's not Balikwisha and Tonetke, but under a previous regime, under a guy called Alan McDonald, with turnover around about £35-40 million,
yep,
having never played in the Champions League, having appointed an absolute rookie manager, that's a compliment to him, John Barnes, yeah, Celtic spent £6 million in 1999 on Ayal Berkovic. And then to top up the madness, in the January, they signed a Brazilian guy called Rafael. I'm too polite to pronounce his surname, but everyone knows his surname. So we're turnover of comfortably under £50 million. £10 million was thrown down the drain. And when Martin O'Neill came in 2000, he wasn't playing ball. He looked at those two guys and says, not for me. So you're 25 years, a quarter of a century down the line, Martin O'Neill's back, and they won't spend £4 million on a proven talent in Scotland. So it sums up everything about where the club is. And on that sort of issue, we do know that we get some comments come into us on FSR. So for any Celtic fans out there, don't worry yourself about it. Although we've wasted lots of money and wages, specifically the guys that were signed in the summer of 2023 and 2025 under the joint leadership of Matt Lowell and Paul Tisdale, Celtic have got virtually nothing to worry about with financial sustainability regulations. European football will be wiped out before UEFA get round to punishing Celtic on that one. Mm. So with that neatly out this road, James, where does Martin O'Neill stand just now? He's had some limited backing in the transfer window. Clearly nothing like the level that he would have wanted, that the level he was used to in 2000 when he came in. But it is what it is, as many people like to say. It doesn't look particularly great at the minute, but Martin O'Neill, the squad that he's got for the games ahead, the backing or lack of he's had from the board, and as we found out today with the date of the Aberdeen game, genuinely within a seven-day period, Thursday Stuttgart away, Sunday Ibrox, Wednesday Pittodrie, that's going to tell us a lot. But James, where do you see Martin O'Neill's mentality, attitude? How do you think he's feeling at this minute with the squad he's got and absolutely no sign of getting supporters behind the team at Celtic Park for what is a very important time?
First, I'm going to comment just briefly on Oxlade-Chamberlain again. I don't like blink signings, guys. I don't. A blink signing is a signing that's designed to create headlines and feed the merchandising wing of the club. But if Martin O'Neill thinks this guy can come in and do a job, then it's not blink signing, is it? He's been brought in to improve the midfield, and we need improvements in the midfield. And it may be the kind of signing that wins you the league, so it's not a blink signing. It's a fancy name, definitely, but that's not quite the same thing. You guys said something earlier on, right? And I never thought these words were going to come out of my mouth, right? I never thought these words were coming out of my mouth. I would have cut my tongue out before I thought I would say these words. But if we start next season with Martin O'Neill as director of football and Sean Maloney in the dugout, I could probably get behind that at this point. Because we need stability as much as we have ever needed it. We need people inside the club running the football department who understand football and who understand what a manager needs to do his job. And if O'Neill managed to claw himself enough power to become director of football, his own remit and his own mandate, and run the department the way he wanted to run it, it would run better than it has run at Celtic for years. The football department would run better than it has for years. And a young manager like Maloney, who's coached under some decent managers, backed properly by the club, could be very successful. And we all knew as a guide, he would never be short of advice, and all of it would be good advice. And I wrote about, I've either wrote about O'Neill for the night or for the morrow, but that guy should get whatever job he wants at the end of this season. If he wants to stay at Celtic and take on a major role, he should get whatever job he wants. But there are two where I think he would be exceptional. As chairman, we have a five-year remit to come in, put together a plan, make sure that plan's presented to the fans, and then leave at the end of it, having restructured the whole club, I think would be a tremendous success. And the fans would get behind it, and it would unify the club in a way very few other things have. And Martin O'Neill as director of football would be almost too good to be true at this point. O'Neill has done something that Rodgers wasn't able to do. Even though he's not quite got the players he wants, O'Neill has made sure that he's got players. He's made sure he's got warm bodies. He's made sure he's got players that fit his style. He's made sure he's got players that can do the job he wants them to do for the rest of the season. And Oxlade-Chamberlain is just the next bit of it. If he gets him in, then he's also won a battle that Rodgers fought in vain, not just this time when he was here, but last time he was here as well. This whole argument about needing experience. And it's funny because they never gave Rodgers experienced players when Rodgers asked for them. But when Ange wanted to sign Aaron Moy, they never stood in his way. They just let Ange go and get him. And if they're backing O'Neill to the same extent, and O'Neill says, I need experience in the midfield, I want go and get me somebody, then they've done it. And O'Neill's won his private battle. And based on that, I would be very happy to see Martin O'Neill in a permanent role at Celtic at the end of the season. If you ask me at a push, if I would accept Martin O'Neill as manager for one more year, I probably would be all right with that as well. Because what the club needs more than anything else is a year of no fucking bullshit. A year where it's all about rebuilding and consolidation and putting a foundation in place for whoever comes in and takes the manager job permanently. We need to restore credibility before we do anything else. And Martin O'Neill, in either the manager's role or a director of football role, restores some credibility because he's a football person who can go and talk to other football people and say, forget about these other clowns. I'm running this. And within a year, we'll be back to where we should be, where we should have been after Munich. And I think we need that as much as we need any. And I'd be all in favour of O'Neill staying a bit longer. As far as I'm concerned, O'Neill, if O'Neill saves this season, he can have his own statue in the car park. He deserves it.
James, he's never done the director of football job before. I'm pretty sure I remember, I think it was shortly after it was announced that Kenny Dalglish had left, and it was suggested to him about getting a director of football in. I might be misquoting him, but it was very close to something along the lines of, I'd rather be dead. But times change.
I'd rather be dead working under one, but I think you could convince him to do the job.
Without having done anything similar in the past, I mean, he's got media contacts. A director of football needs to be in touch with lots of agents beyond the ball, what's happening at other clubs.
I think O'Neill knows everybody in Scottish football and beyond. O'Neill has the contacts book to be able to do this. He's coached in the Premier League. He's been an international manager. He's respected throughout the whole of the game. He's a former European Cup winner as a player. O'Neill's absolute perfect. He's an absolute perfect fit for this job. He could do the same job that Beckenbauer did at Bayern Munich for a long time, Cruyff did at Ajax and Barcelona. And that's the kind of person you need. You need somebody who knows the club inside out, who's played the game at a senior level, who's managed at a senior level, and who knows all the wee ins and outs and intricacies of being a manager, as well as being a player. And I think it's an absolute perfect job for him. And we need somebody with that kind of cachet and that kind of credibility, who can go and negotiate with clubs and negotiate with agents again with the attitude like, I'm no them. Forget about them. You're dealing with me now. I'm running this now. And I think clubs would respect that and respect Celtic again.
I think he's definitely got the contacts in England, absolutely no doubt. But I don't think he knows the game enough in Eastern Europe and Scandinavia.
But I think that O'Neill knows people who do. I think O'Neill... See, this is the thing about bringing in a football guy. A football guy will understand this job better than some bean counter ever will. Right? And O'Neill will know the kind of people you have to bring in to get this job done. I mean, it, God rest him, it would have been a perfect role for Tommy Burns. I never thought Tommy Burns was a great manager, but I thought Tommy Burns had a great vision for what Celtic should have been. The fact that he went and he tried to learn all this stuff, all these continental academies and all that stuff. If we actually took the time to build that model, we wouldn't be talking like this right now. We would be a credible European club. So yep. We need somebody like that.
Yep. 30 years ago, Tommy Burns was off to Ajax Academy, Juventus and other places. While he was a Celtic manager. And look at us now. We've got a team in the Lowland League producing next to nothing. But we do have a game on Saturday, Eric. It seems that Martin O'Neill has got things very much in the groove for home fixtures. They all seem fairly routine. Falkirk caused a few scares on Saturday, Sunday even. Falkirk played very well up until Celtic's second goal. The game was very much in the balance. So I would expect there's going to have another fairly routine, and I'll take it every day of the week after the Wilfred Nancy experience. It looks like a fairly routine home match on Saturday in the Scottish Cup. Would you anticipate the standard 2-0 home win?
Yeah, I think we could probably go a bit better than that. I suppose what Saturday will do is it will give us an opportunity to have a look at some of the signings. I think that he should play it. You know, if he whatever about starting them, if he brings them on as substitutions, a few of them at least, you know, to get us a view of what they're like. I think it's a good opportunity. I do think that we can score 3 or 4 in this one. Dundee had a bit of a purple patch through the Christmas period, but they've gone off the boil again. So I don't expect them to pose too much of a threat to us. It's a cup game. They can't close up ranks and they can't put 11 behind the ball, because if they want to try and take anything from it themselves, they're going to have to come out and fight. So I think it'll be an open game, and that'll play more into our hands then, because it'll be an open game. We'll be able to probably pick them off and score 3 or 4 easy enough. I would be confident that we should get through it comfortably, even if there's 30,000 empty seats. I would say that we'll still do a job and do it quite easily against them. And as I said, it's a good opportunity for us to get a look at a few of these new signings to see what they're like. So yeah, I'd be comfortable 3-4-0 win there on Saturday.
Yep, it should be a fairly straightforward one, but you must start it off 100%. You can't go in third gear. Getting back to the Brendan Rodgers and Honda Civics and Ferraris, etc. James, you'll be. What's your expectation for Saturday and a likely place in the last 8 in the Scottish Cup?
I think we'll win comfortably. I think that we'll see some of the new signings play, and I think we'll win comfortably. I don't have very much doubt about the outcome, even if it's played in front of a 3/4 empty stadium, which, by the way, I don't expect it to be. But yeah, I mean, I can't see past us. O'Neill was the form manager in the league. He's the form manager in the country. I mean, the media spent so much time salivating about McInnes and salivating about Danny Sausage Roll that they forgot who the on-form manager in the league is. If you take out the 8 weeks of Wilfred Nancy Hill, Martin O'Neill is streets ahead of everybody else. So, I with some new signings in the team, with some new blood, I expect us to do well for the rest of the season. I think we'll win the league now. There you go. I'm pretty confident about it.
Well, I think the Stuttgart Ibrox Pataudry week is pivotal to things. But that's about all from us tonight. Apologies for not being on Monday. The good news is you've only got a couple of days more to wait till next Monday. So us three cheery chappies, we'll be back again on Monday, 6:30, back into the usual routine. So if you like what we're doing, please share and comment. If you've not subscribed, please do. Subscriptions are moving up quite smoothly. That's impressive. We're grateful for it, and it helps in lots of ways. Gets you up the Google and the YouTube out. James, what's making you laugh? Over to you, James.
Well, first, by the way, I want to send our best wishes to all the guys at the Irvine Celtic Sports Club, which suffered a mishap, we will say, earlier in the week. A mishap being investigated by police. So you'll understand that I don't want to say much more about it than that. No, I was just laughing at one of the comments about the rats at Ibrox. I sent somebody a message about that the day. especially, and I like the part about how, you know, it was eventually spotted on the pitch where it failed to show James Tavernier a yellow card. And that's all I'm saying about that, I know.
Yep. Four games in less than 2 months, the same official, and you don't need to look too far in David Dickinson's Facebook. The family connections, we've all gone private recently, but we've all got the screenshots. We know exactly what David Dickinson is. In no football society would the same official get four matches within 2 months with the win club. Four contentious penalties.
Mark my words, he'll get Ibrox as well.
All going in one direction. So we'll be back again on Monday. We'll be back in our usual slot. So please like and subscribe. If you've watched us live, come back and give us a comment. If you're watching us, if you're not watching us live, feel free to comment. So thanks again for James, for Eric, and the folk behind the scenes at Snack helping us put this together. We'll be back again, and thanks for listening. And fingers crossed, Martin O'Neill keeps the show on the road. Dundee should be straightforward, but there's bigger tests coming up. Cheers.
Oh, hell yeah.
See you Monday, guys. That wasn't too bad.
I watched a bit of
time for an off the cuff show, guys, was it?
It'd been Brian Wilson's Celtic TV interview earlier on the day.
My internet is a bit poor here by the looks of it, because I've tried to add you guys back in there just to chat to you, and it's not working too well.
Gets backed up where he is a different matter, but he's certainly saying the right things. He's certainly talking about fan engagement and wanting to sit down and speak to supporters. He's talking about a full-scale strategic review and stuff like that. So he's certainly saying the right stuff.
Whether James, or not is that, is that today? Is that today?